was to omit him. Moreover, Martyr Soleimani was not active only in the military aspect. He played an important role in the international diplomacy too. The creation of conditions for cooperation of the regional nations against the U.S. was among his important measures. Leonid Slotsky, chairman of the International Committee of the Russian Duma, has also stated, "The name of Martyr Soleimani is the code name of resistance because this great martyr, withstanding against the American hegemony, proved to the world that the U.S. power is hollow." The U.S. officials tried to hide any role of the Zionist regime in the terror act against Lieutenant General Soleimani to make the regime immune against Iran's revenge. But a former Zionist military official has confessed that Tel Aviv was complicit in assassinating the great commander. Tamir Heyman, former head of the Zionist regime military intelligence, explicitly said that Tel Aviv had a hand in the operation led by the United States. Martyr Soleimani is a national hero among Iranians as he shattered the dream of Daesh for capturing of Iraq and Syria. According to a poll in Maryland, General Soleimani's popularity increased from 73% in 2016 to 82% in 2019 in Iran. A few days after the U.S. historical folly to assassinate General Soleimani, the Islamic Republic of Iran targeted the American terroristic base of Ain al-Assad in Iraq, which was just a slap in the face of the U.S., to quote the leader of the Islamic Revolution. Ayatollah Khamenei said, "I will never forget Martyr Soleimani's memory, and also that of Martyr Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. What I'd like to say that Soleimani's martyrdom is a historical event. It is not an ordinary event to be forgotten in history. It was registered in history as a bright point. And Martyr Soleimani became the hero of the Iranian nation and the hero of the Islamic Ummah. This is a basic point. Iranians should be boastful of themselves as a man from among them moves from a remote village, makes effort, struggles, embarks on self-building, and turns into a bright luminary and a hero of the Islamic Ummah." The Iranian judiciary put on the agenda to prosecute the American crime of assassinating Lieutenant General Soleimani soon after this heinous crime. Thus, the American government and 41 real and legal persons were sentenced to pay $49,770,000,000. The penal pursuit for this act of terror has led to the issuance of a bill of indictment, and the penal charges of culprits, including Donald Trump, have been addressed, and the subpoena has been issued too. The Iranian president's legal deputy, Mohammad Dehghan, said, "The issue of martyrdom of General Soleimani is beyond domestic issues, and we have warned the American government that their respite will expire on April 20, 2024, and we will register our complaint against the U.S. government for two reasons." According to Dehghan, the first reason for the complaint is that the U.S. government had not prevented this crime against an individual such as Martyr Soleimani, who enjoyed international support and was on a diplomatic mission. The second reason for Iran's complaint is that the United States has so far not put on trial Trump and those who have committed this crime. Thus, Iran, according to the international conventions, sues a complaint against the U.S. government.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes. Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
December is the time of year that Christians worldwide celebrate the birth of the Messiah, Jesus, may peace and blessings be upon him. Celebrations in Bethlehem, the birthplace of Jesus, are considered holy because the passion and resurrection of Jesus happened inside the city's walls. Bethlehem is a Palestinian city in the Israeli-occupied West Bank, surrounded today by a massive concrete wall, military checkpoints and illegal settlements.
It's imposing a system of control that I'm sure Jesus was very familiar of. If he's born today, he would be born on our side of the wall.
According to the Gospels, the most important features of Christianity have their origins in Jerusalem. The institution of the Eucharist took place while Jesus was celebrating Passover with his disciples in Jerusalem. Also, his crucifixion at the Golgotha, where Jesus remained calm, compassionate, and loving even in the face of death. And according to Christian belief, his resurrection 3 days later all happened in Jerusalem. In this way, Jerusalem constitutes a unique and holy city for Christianity. Other holy sites are associated with events from the Old Testament, the lives of Mary, John the Baptist, and the apostles, with endless more associated with later Christian saints, holy men and women, and local traditions. But Bethlehem will be a somber place this year, as the Christian of the three major churches, Greek Orthodox, Armenian, and Catholic, have stated they will not be celebrating.
This year is going to be totally different. There won't be any lights. We will not have the Christmas tree. We will be mourning those who are being slaughtered in Gaza. There's a deep atmosphere of grief here, and all the churches have decided to only have religious services for Christmas.
These holy places, the indigenous Christian community and pilgrims who come to visit from all over the world, have long been the subject of violence, harassment, and intimidation by the occupation forces who have not allowed the community to worship in peace. The Temple Mount is no exception, often the subject of brutality, despite being considered a holy place. It is where Jesus was first presented as an infant to the temple and its people by his holy mother, Mariam. It was also there where he famously taught elders of the community at the tender age of 13, and later threw out the money changers from the same temple grounds. Unfortunately, the percentage of Christians living in Bethlehem and in other occupied Palestinian territories has plummeted. With the community currently totaling under 2% of the population, the fear that Christians will one day no longer have a presence in Palestine is slowly becoming a reality. The reason is extremely clear for the indigenous worshipers.
The World Health Organization has once again sounded the alarm on deepening humanitarian and medical crisis in war-torn Gaza. It has called on the international community to take urgent steps to alleviate the grave peril facing Palestinians in the besieged territory. According to the latest WHO assessments, Gaza has 13 partially functioning hospitals, 2 minimally functioning ones, and 21 that are not functioning at all.
There are actually no functional hospitals left in the north. Al-Ahli was the last one, but is now minimal functional. And still treating patients but not admitting new ones, along with Al-Shifa, Al-Ada, and Al-Sahaba Hospital. So these hospitals are still sheltering also thousands of displaced people. At Al-Ahli, about 10 staff, all junior doctors and nurses, continue to provide basic first aid, pain management, as much as possible, wound care, and trauma stabilization services.
The Nasser Medical Complex, which is the most important referral hospital in southern Gaza, is partially functioning. The world body has expressed concern about reports of residential areas being ordered to evacuate around the hospital, which are extremely concerning. According to WHO reports and eyewitness accounts, when military activities intensify near the hospital, ambulances, patients, staff, and WHO and partners are unable to reach the complex. The world body has also said that it is working to strengthen and expand the existing struggling health system.
WHO will keep striving to supply health facilities in the north of Gaza, but without fuel, staff, and other essential needs medicines, it won't make, medicines won't make a difference, and all patients will die slowly and painfully.
It has also expressed concern about the fresh wave of displacement of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, who have been pushed by Israel to move to further south. It says the displacement of people will further strain health facilities in the south, which are already struggling to meet the population's immense needs. The WHO statement read, "This forced mass movement of people will also lead to more overcrowding, increased risk of infectious diseases, and make it even harder to deliver humanitarian aid. Most of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are grappling with terrible injuries, acute hunger, and severe risk of disease." WHO Chief Tedros Adhanom has also repeated a call on the international community to, quote, take urgent steps to alleviate the grave peril facing the population of Gaza. The remarks come a day after the WHO staff went on a high-risk mission to deliver humanitarian supplies to the Al-Shifa Hospital in northern Gaza and Al-Amal Palestine Red Crescent Society in southern Gaza. Both hospitals serve as shelters for displaced Palestinians seeking safety amid relentless Israeli bombardment. At Al-Shifa Hospital, a reported 50,000 people are sheltering, while 14,000 others are at Al-Amal.
Seeing children, women, young men, old men and women, people bleeding out. I, at the same time yesterday at Al-Aqsa, I saw a woman who had multiple gunshot wounds. An attempt was made to refer her, and she was referred back because she was bleeding so heavily. So, I mean, there's blood everywhere in these hospitals at the moment. We're seeing almost only trauma cases come through the door, and at a scale that's quite difficult to believe. It's a bloodbath, as we said before. It's carnage.
They have been injured and have been in the hospital for 10 days. As soon as the Israeli troops withdrew, I rushed to take them. As you can see, they suffer from total burns for no reason. They were left with no food or water and no care. There are other injured members of my family, but I wasn't able to carry them. After I arrived at the hospital, I witnessed massive destruction, an indescribable scene. Patients are scattered in every corner, beds are overturned, and medical material are damaged.
Comments come as Israel is pressing ahead with its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. From corpses lying unattended on the streets, to hospitals and schools reduced to rubble, to children made orphans and tens of thousands of people rendered homeless, the gory events unfolding in the besieged Gaza Strip since October 7 are a textbook example of genocide and ethnic cleansing. The death toll in the coastal territory since the Israeli regime launched its indiscriminate aerial and ground attacks nearly 3 months ago is now over 21,000, most of them children and women. Almost all refugee camps have been rendered uninhabitable due to random strikes, forcing the majority of the population to sleep under the open sky amid heavy winds and heavy downpours. The barbaric attacks were only meant to give an image of victory to its defeated army, which has only succeeded in killing unarmed civilians and destroying civilian facilities.
This is really the worst thing that U.S. and Israel could do to Palestinians. The genocide is... the heinous war crimes are gone unnoticed.
The Zionist Israeli entity intensified its aggression on Gaza, while keeping one eye on Hezbollah in Lebanon and the other on the West Bank, primarily due to its strategic proximity. Neither the entity nor the United States of America foresaw that Yemen, which has been at war for years without a practical resolution, would turn into a new front. In November, the Yemeni armed forces declared war on the Zionist entity in support of the resistance in Gaza, presenting a significant and unwelcome surprise for the entity. Yemen initiated missile and drone attacks on targets in the Zionist Israeli port of Eilat, overlooking the Red Sea. However, the Yemeni armed forces did not stop there and announced the imposition of what could be described as a naval blockade on the entity. It appears that there are significant losses due to the Yemeni missiles, prompting the Pentagon in the first week of December to announce a plan to form a naval force to so-called protect international navigation in the Bab el-Mandeb Strait and the Red Sea. However, despite the availability of European countries' warships and frigates, they do not express great enthusiasm to join this force. Well, that is mainly due to the fact that European countries do not possess a large naval fleet. Warships are distributed between protecting the coasts of these countries and positioning near Ukraine in anticipation of any developments in the Russian-Ukrainian war. On the other hand, these countries are concerned that if they participate in confronting the Yemeni armed forces in their Gaza support operations, their commercial ships passing through the Bab el-Mandeb and the Red Sea could themselves become targets for the Yemenis. In the meantime, despite the Pentagon's threat to respond to the Yemenis, the Yemeni armed forces daily reaffirm their determination to continue targeting Israeli entity ships and ships bound towards occupied Palestine until the Zionist entity ends the genocide against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. The matter is no longer limited to imposing a blockade on Zionist Israeli ports. The geostrategic battle and its escalating events are shaking the world. The closure of the Red Sea to ships colluding with the enemy turns into a heroic festival, teaching the U.S. and Zionist Israel harsh lessons and threatening them with more successive blows capable of breaking their alliances and coercive global policies. These strikes establish a new stage of resistance given the expansion of its military operations and the development of its capabilities to combat malicious international hegemony. There is a clear evolution in the history of resistance post-October 7 and after the introduction of the equation of the Red Sea and the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman.
Christians and Christianity are under attack in Gaza and Palestine more generally. Zionist ideology is not just anti-Muslim, it is anti-Christian too. What is the common factor that links Muslims and Christians in Palestine? They're Palestinian. So it's no surprise that the Zionists are making sure to destroy churches as well as mosques. On October the 19th, Israel bombed the Church of St. Porphyrius, Gaza's oldest, killing at least 18 people. The church is said to be the third oldest Christian church in the world, with the current building having been constructed by the Crusaders in the 1150s or 1160s. A church was built on the site as early as 425 AD. 2 days earlier, an explosion at Al-Ahli Arab Hospital, an Anglican institution located a few blocks away, killed and injured hundreds, according to Palestinian health authorities. The evidence is beginning to mount that the attacks on specifically Christian targets are themselves a specific genocide contained within the larger genocide aimed at Muslims and indeed all Palestinians. On December 16th, the Zionists directly targeted a Christian convent. An Israeli army sniper assassinated two Christian women, Nahed and her daughter Samar, inside the parish of the Holy Family in Gaza on Saturday, said the Latin Patriarchate's media office. One of the women fell while trying to rescue the other. Seven others were injured while attempting to help. Gunfire was directed at them inside the walls of the monastery, and there was no resistance in the area, it added. An Israeli artillery vehicle also targeted the Monastery of the Sisters of Mother Teresa in Gaza City, which shelters more than 54 disabled individuals within the church walls. The Zionist attack also destroyed the fuel tank, the power generator, and the solar panels, in addition to extensive damage that rendered the place unsuitable for habitation or providing care for people with disabilities. On January the 26th this year, a mob of Israeli settlers attacked an Armenian bar in the Christian quarter of the old city of Jerusalem, shouting, "Death to Arabs, death to Christians." At the beginning of October, a video emerged of ultra-Orthodox settlers in Al-Quds spitting on Christian pilgrims. Armed and violent settlers are also in the process of attempting to liquidate the Armenian quarter in Al-Quds and with it the wider Christian presence, which has been there continuously since the 4th century. Only 800 to 1,000 Christians are believed to still live in Gaza, constituting the oldest Christian community in the world, dating back to the 1st century.
This year, Christmas celebrations are cancelled in Bethlehem, and for obvious reasons. It's impossible to celebrate while our people in Gaza are going through a genocide.
It's no wonder the church in Palestine has cancelled Christmas.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with veterans from the Sacred Defense and the Resistance Field. The meeting was held in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on September 20, 2023, inaugurating Sacred Defense Week. The front lines of our battlefield were mihrabs, the place in front of the mosque where the prayer leader leads the communal prayers of worship. In the middle of the night, a young man, a commander, or someone who was not a commander, a company, or a battalion, would sit down, shed tears, cry, and pray. This did not happen in just 1, 2, or 10 cases. This was happening in all the various areas of the front. Where in the world, in which war, in which military conflict has such a situation ever been seen? Where has there been this passion for martyrdom, these invocations, such attentiveness to Almighty God, a desire for martyrdom, and such things? There was also the general presence of the nation. In other words, the battlefield did not just consist of the area where there was a conflict taking place. Areas behind the fronts were also part of the battlefront, like the places from where the forces were being supplied. Around the world, military bases are the place where forces are supplied from. But here, they came from the military bases, mosques, hayats, universities, seminaries, and schools.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
A school teacher would go to fight in the war and his students would follow him. There were many martyrs who were high school students, many who were university students, and many who were seminary students. A large number of people from the mosques and a large number of those who spoke for the people on the minbars served as this magnificent movement. These people were the defenders. There were families, housewives, and others in various sectors who were supporting the effort as well. In places where they were working to support our troops, they would wash the blood-stained clothes of the soldiers. This has been written about in the book, The Pool of Blood, and I have mentioned this book before. The entire nation was involved in these affairs. Now, I'm not saying that every single person in the nation was involved, but this movement took place among the general public and among different levels in society. It was not limited to a group of people who would leave the barracks to fight and return. The greatness of an event can be well understood from this factor and factors of this kind. In my opinion, dozens of clarifying and artistic works can be produced with regard to this aspect, especially with regard to this third aspect, who were the defenders. Work should not be limited to merely writing books.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
In a poignant display of solidarity, Christians residing in Pakistan have opted to hold traditional Christmas celebrations with simplicity due to Israel's ongoing onslaught in Gaza. Their decision is a symbolic gesture of empathy and concern for relentless challenges faced by the people of Gaza during this festive season.
The message of Jesus Christ was the message of peace and security. We need peace in Palestine. On this Christmas, our hearts are heavy and we feel compelled to express our brothers and sisters in Gaza.
Pastors from various Christian communities across Pakistan gathered in the capital city Islamabad on Sunday for a special joint prayer meeting to appeal for a ceasefire in Gaza.
In the spirit of Christmas, we gather here to raise our voices in prayer for the innocent lives affected by the conflict in Gaza. Our prayers are with the people of Palestine, and we stand united in our plea for a ceasefire and lasting peace.
Meanwhile, a diverse gathering of people also expressed solidarity with the oppressed people of Gaza through the display of vibrant balloons, each carefully adorned with messages of solidarity and support.
The situation of Gaza is extremely distressing. It is genocide, it is violence, and it is extreme power play in a region that does not deserve this at all.
Cease fire now!
Demanding an immediate ceasefire, the individuals of all ages called on the world to halt the ongoing genocide of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip.
Christians in Pakistan are using this Christmas to advocate for peace in Gaza rather than engaging in traditional celebrations. The gesture underscores that humanity is not confined by religious or national boundaries, but it is all about showing compassion for the people in distress. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
For the 11th weekend in a row since the start of Israel's most brutal war on Gaza, rallies were held in Sydney and Melbourne in support of Palestinians. In Sydney, thousands of people gathered once again in Central Business District's Hyde Park for a rally dubbed Stop the Genocide in Gaza, called by the Palestine Action Group, an activist formation committed to supporting Palestine and opposing Israel apartheid. A number of other groups also joined the rally, calling on Western governments to finally put some pressure on Israel for its ongoing violence, genocide and oppression against Palestinians.
I think the Australian government continues to be a firm backer of Israel, to their great shame. So clearly, again, 11 weeks of massive protests, the likes of which we've never seen before, is having an impact, and they're feeling the pressure, so they're shifting their rhetoric a bit.
The rally, attended by school union representatives, was also joined by a group of outraged Sydney-based Jews who hold anti-Zionist views.
So-called posture of the Western countries and so-called international law is, in my opinion, just pointless. And it's appalling, but quite frankly, we've got a genocide happening right in front of us.
Some of the speakers acknowledged that Palestinians are experiencing the same struggle as the indigenous people in Australia. Many hundreds of thousands of Aboriginals have been killed or forcibly removed from their land and their families at the hands of colonial authorities over the past 200 years. People at the Sydney rally praised South Africa for filing a case against Israel at the International Court of Justice, accusing Tel Aviv of committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. More than 21,500 civilians have been killed by the Israeli army so far, including nearly 9,000 children and 6,500 women.
I mean, it is genocide. They should go to the International Criminal Court because they are committing war crimes. War crimes many, many times over. I mean, it's obvious, you know, this is the obvious to ordinary people that this is a massive ongoing war crime.
Also on Saturday, a rally in solidarity with the Gazans was held at Melbourne's State Library for the 11th week in a row. Max Civili, Sydney.
In response to the call of the Free Palestine movement, massive crowds gathered in the Yarmouk refugee camp near Damascus to show their confidence in the strength and determination of the resistance in Gaza, confirming that the Al-Aqsa Flood operation is a fateful battle that ignited hope in their hearts, as it brings them closer to the defeat of the Israeli occupation and their return to their homeland.
We are here to support people in the Gaza Strip and voice our unconditional support to the resistance groups. After nearly 3 months of fighting, it's clear that the Zionist regime is facing defeat. The Al-Aqsa Flood operation revealed that Israel's collapse is imminent.
The Israeli occupation politically has nothing now, military has nothing now, security has nothing, economy has nothing, and we also tell the world that October 7th is the gate for the liberation of the whole Palestine, from the river to the sea.
Participants confirmed that the excess of resistance embraces the Palestinian struggle and supports all resistance factions, including the Al-Qassam Brigades and Al-Quds Brigades. They expressed their anger at the Israeli atrocities against the people of Gaza, emphasizing their adherence to the right of return and liberating Al-Quds.
Syrians and Palestinians have shown their absolute faith in the victory of the Resistance Front and Al-Aqsa Front operation, not only as a path to liberate the occupied lands, but also as inspiration for the generations to come. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Thousands took to the streets of Austria's capital, Vienna, to express solidarity with Gaza on Saturday. These demonstrations were special in the sense that they were the first street protests after a court ruling removing some restrictions on acts of solidarity with Palestine. Since October 7, police and government have been imposing strict sanctions on protests and even banned expressions of solidarity with Gaza entirely. Following a demonstration on November 5 in the city of Salzburg, charges were filed against participants who held signs showing Palestine in its pre-1947 borders. Police argued the banner constitute a criminal offense due to incitement to hatred for denying the Israeli regime's right to exist. The tide has now turned. The court dropped the charges a few days ago, arguing they violated freedom of expression. It ruled that it is lawful to carry signs showing maps of Palestine at demonstrations. The ruling comes only days after similar verdicts in Germany, where courts in Cologne and Munster ruled that the slogans "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free," "Child murderer Israel," and "Stop the genocide in Gaza" can be freely expressed in the country. German police have previously used these slogans to prohibit protests for Gaza, creating worries that the free speech is under threat.
I'm here because I feel a duty to stand against the destruction of life, the environment, and dignity, because this destruction is being done in my name. And instead of making me safer, it's making it more dangerous for me to live in the diaspora.
While their governments stand staunchly on the side of the Zionist regime of Israel, thousands of people in Austria and Germany keep marching for Palestine. Experts say these demonstrations have placed some real pressure on European governments, pushing them to distance themselves from Israeli atrocities.
The court rulings are a welcome boost for the Palestine solidarity movement in Europe, where concerns are growing over a breakdown on Palestine supporters. Following recent court decisions, it is believed the coming year will see more and more demonstrations for Gaza. Dieter Reinisch, Vienna.
Iraq is marking the fourth anniversary of the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. During an event attended by high-ranking Iraqi and Iranian officials, the two commanders were prized as a role model for all generations.
Today we stand alongside our Iranian brothers to remember our leaders General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, whose memories are engraved in our minds. And although they are gone physically, their thoughts are still with us.
Former Iraqi Prime Minister Nour al-Maliki admired the two leaders and their role in the fight against terrorism in the region. The chief of Iraq Popular Mobilization Units, Faleh al-Fayyad, also addressed the ceremony. He said the role of General Qasem Soleimani and his companion was essential in standing against Daesh. Several Iraqi lawmakers were also present at the event. They said the two commanders' determination to fight against terrorists irritated their backers.
Today we remember the pure souls that fought against terror and defeated something that made terror supporters mad. That's why they committed such a cowardly act of killing our leaders in Iraq.
They expect that by assassinating our leaders, they will weaken our resistance, but they have failed to achieve their goals, and even after committing their cowardly act, it did nothing more than adding strength to us.
The attendees also condemned the latest attacks on anti-terror forces in Iraq and Syria, which led to the martyrdom of Sayyid Razi Mousawi. They demanded an immediate end to the U.S. military presence in Iraq, and they argued that this is the only solution to stop the continuous attacks on Iraqi forces and end violations against Iraq's sovereignty. They also expressed their solidarity with the Palestinians and condemned the Israeli war on Gaza. A huge crowd have gathered today to commemorate the fourth anniversary of the assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Al-Hajj Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. The legacy of the anti-terror icons continue to live on, inspiring people in the region to stand up for the oppressed. Muslim Salim, Baghdad.
The journalists have found themselves stalked by the indiscriminate Israeli strikes, which so far have claimed the lives of over 100 journalists working for different media agencies across the globe. Journalists believe the regime is deliberately attacking them, and that they are paying the price of covering the Israeli massacres and atrocities committed day and night in Gaza, and putting on display the really brutal face of the Israeli occupation. This undoubtedly has limited the chance of the Israeli propaganda machine to whitewash the murder of Palestinian children and deceive people outside the occupied territories on what is really going on.
The Israeli occupation is still practicing this genocide against the Palestinian people generally, and the journalists particularly. Till this moment, the Israeli army has deliberately killed 105 journalists who were doing their job of covering the Israeli crimes. And the reason behind that is to curb the coverage of Israeli crimes. In addition to that, it destroyed 96 media agencies in Gaza.
The sufferings of the Palestinian journalists in Gaza are not limited to the Israeli attacks. They are also grappling with the disastrous humanitarian conditions they are experiencing along with their families. Many of them lost their houses to constant Israeli bombardments and joined the displaced people in Gaza, who are estimated to comprise over 80% of the region's population. All they have now are small tents created of pieces of plastic, wood, and fabric, or at best, classes in the normal schools, which are supposed to be safe, but have been repeatedly targeted by Israel.
We, the Palestinian journalists, consider ourselves standing on the same front beside the resistance members on the battlefield. Our battle is to show the world the reality of Israeli massacres, despite the ongoing crimes against journalists and the catastrophic humanitarian conditions in Gaza. As you see, I live here in this press van. It's really hard to fulfill your basic needs, even when it comes to going to the bathroom. My family fled to the schools, and they faced the same hardships.
Journalists in Gaza have to deal with many problems when trying to prepare a simple report on the situation in the Strip. Many cannot even find a chair or a desk, and hence they cannot perform journalistic tasks smoothly. Making matters worse, most of the time there is no internet in the Strip, and journalists cannot communicate with the world.
As a Palestinian journalist, similar to all my colleagues, we live in a very complicated situation. Even though we are chased by the Israeli strikes and killings, we find ourselves obliged to forget about the difficulties we face in every aspect of life due to this onslaught for the sake of reporting the truth. I assure you that every single one of the 2.3 million Palestinians here has his or her tragedy, and this includes us. Our daily life is horrific and unimaginable at all levels.
Like all the other Gazans, many Palestinian journalists in the besieged district have been killed brutally by the Israeli bombardments, and those who are still alive continue to suffer from the unlivable conditions in the region. Mutia Abu Msabih, the central area of Gaza Strip.
Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has slammed Israel's assassination of senior Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps advisor Sayed Radi Mousavi in Syria. Hezbollah called it a flagrant and brazen attack and a transgression of borders. Deputy head of Hezbollah's executive council told Press TV that General Qasem Soleimani had predicted that Sayed Razi would be assassinated in the battle to liberate al-Quds.
His martyrdom was only a matter of time. He was a man who had spent his youth on sacrifice. He was always ready to offer whatever assistance was needed to the resistance groups. This assassination will not stop the path which Sayed Radi al-Mousavi has opened for us. It will not stop us and other resistance groups in the region from continuing to walk in this path. We will remain on the battlefield to face this enemy which is occupying and looting our land. And with the blessing of the martyrs, the future will witness a new victory for the resistance in Gaza and the region.
Palestinian resistance factions Hamas and Islamic Jihad also said in a statement that the assassination of Brigadier General Radi Mousavi on Syrian territory is a crime and a cowardly act that threatens security and stability in the region. The Palestinian resistance groups lauded Sayed Radi for his role in supporting the resistance in Palestine.
We know that he was very close to General Qasem Soleimani and therefore worked closely with the Palestinian resistance groups and all resistance groups in the region. His efforts were based on the same school of thought as General Soleimani, and he walked in the same path which they had opened together. Today, we can see the result of these efforts in Gaza and the West Bank.
The Iranian cultural advisor in Beirut said General Mousavi was considered as a man who devoted his life to the Palestinian cause and finally willingly sacrificed it for the sake of Al-Quds.
Sayyid Radhi Musavi, God bless his soul, was one of the great leaders in the IRGC who devoted his life to support the honorable resistance in the region, especially in Lebanon and Palestine. Therefore, he is a part of every blessed bullet or rocket that is being fired to target the criminal Zionist regime, whether in Palestine or Lebanon.
Sayyid Radhi is now seen as a regional leader and martyr, just as General Soleimani. He is regarded by many as a martyr in the long battle for the liberation of Al-Quds. On the martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani, the resistance front has bid farewell to another leader. Sayyid Radhi Mousavi's role in supporting the resistance groups of Lebanon and Palestine was significant. However, for the resistance, martyrdom is another form of divine victory. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Immortal Commander. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. In the first minutes of January 3, 2020, the airplane carrying Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani landed at Baghdad Airport, and a few moments later, he got into the car, which was carrying Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and his eight other companions. Just a few minutes later, the American drone MQ-9 targeted the black SUV and fired 10 Hellfire laser rockets to martyr the greatest commander of the resistance front and nine of his fellow combatants. In a matter of minutes, this heartrending news topped all media in the world. Less than a week later, the Islamic Republic of Iran, as a retaliatory measure for this dastardly terrorist act, missiled the U.S. Ain al-Assad base in Iraq. The bodies of the great commanders of Resistance Front, Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, were recorded very glorious funeral processions in Iraq and Iran. Over 25 million people took part in their funeral ceremonies in various cities of Iran and Iraq, and they were buried after prayer by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. The missile attacks of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps to the U.S. terrorist base in Ain al-Assad were carried out exactly at the time of burial of martyr Soleimani in Kerman. When the terrorist outfit Daesh, ISIS, started occupying vast regions of Iraq and Syria in 2011, it was Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani who harnessed this rapid dog of the U.S. Zionist Arab Unholy Coalition. The great commander expanded the resistance front among the nations of the region and created the greatest nightmare for the Takfiri terrorists and their masters in the U.S., Israel, and the Arab sheikhdoms. After arresting Abu Omar al-Baghdadi in 2010, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi was appointed as the ringleader of the terrorist group. Concurrent with the political crisis in Syria, the elements of the terrorist grouplet started their gruesome activities in the country, and the Iraqi branch was formed under the title of Jabhat al-Nusra. In 2013, however, al-Baghdadi announced in an audio message the merger of Jabhat al-Nusra, an Islamic State in Iraq, to shape the terrorist grouplet of Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS, or ISIL. The Daesh terrorists entered the Iraqi city of Fallujah in 2014 through massacre of the people, and then attacked Mosul, and a few hours later captured the city. General Soleimani formed the Axis of Resistance, comprising of selfless and brave forces of Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iran. These courageous forces were called the Defenders of Shrine, as they made a stiff dam against the advancement of Takfiri terrorists towards the holy shrines in Iraq and Syria. The stiff resistance and steadfastness of the Defenders of Shrine frustrated Daesh and other terrorist grouplets, which were within hundreds of meters of the Syrian presidential palace and had taken over more than 70% of the Iraqi territory too. In late summer of 2017, Lieutenant General Soleimani sent a letter to Ayatollah Khamenei, whereby he had announced the end of the Daesh rule for good. This sweet event had taken place with bringing down the sinister flag of Daesh in Bu Kemal city of Syria. The selfless and effective presence of Martyr Soleimani in the scene of the fight against terrorist outfits and defeating them made the leader of the Islamic Revolution grant him Zulfaqar, which is the highest military badge in Iran. In fact, he was the first commander to receive this badge, although he had already received three other badges from the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. The assassination of General Qasem Soleimani was not just the outcome of a historic decision by the former U.S. President Donald Trump. It was, rather, the result of at least 2 years of different stratagems by some of the U.S. regional allies and several hardline officials and organizations to convince Trump to embark on such a silly act. After the assassination of General Soleimani from January 3rd to 8, 2020, Trump, his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, and other U.S. officials started threatening Iran in case of any retaliatory measure by Tehran. Trump went to the extent that the United States would bombard 52 cultural centers in Iran if any of the American interests were targeted in response to General Soleimani's martyrdom. Yet, the missile attack in the early hours of January 8 on Ain al-Assad base reversed all calculations. It was the first destructive attack against an American base after the Second World War. The attack exposed the paralysis of the U.S. defense missile system, which has always been propagated as a mythical, invincible ability in the world. IRGC's measure further bolstered the Islamic Republic's deterrence against any would-be enemy. Nevertheless, Iran announced that the attack was not the revenge for Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, and Tehran keeps the right to prosecute everyone involved in the terrorist act against Martyr Soleimani. After Iran's missile attack on Ain al-Assad base, the United States took out its missile bases from West Asia and Saudi Arabia. The next outcome of this attack was the permanent fear among the U.S. on the vulnerability of its bases in the region and the speedy exit of the U.S. forces from Afghanistan and Iraq. The terror act against the top commander of the IRGC Quds Force by the U.S. was a flagrant breach of the international laws and a clear instance of state terrorism. The Islamic Republic has the right of legitimate defense and retaliatory act in the international arena. Iran and Iraq have already applied these two capacities. The IRGC attack on Ain al-Assad and within the framework of legitimate defense and the Iraqi parliament's ratification to expel the U.S. military forces from the country are only the first steps to retaliate the American state terrorism. Although the Islamic Republic of Iran has sued lawsuit for the trial of 42 American real and legal persons involved in the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and taken other legal and penal measures to both bring the criminals to trial and prevent the repetition of such acts of terror, the true revenge for the sacred blood of Qasem Soleimani is to expel every American force from the region, as the leader of the Islamic Revolution stated after the martyrdom of General Soleimani. God willing, this will materialize soon.
Bazaar. Historically, each epoch has a particular industrial growth spurt. At present, what we are witnessing is another industrial shift, but this time, it is towards knowledge-based products. These items have allowed several processes in our lives and industries to become faster and more efficient. For example, medical devices such as the hemodialysis machine have helped treat illnesses that were previously lost causes. The development of knowledge-based products is also important for the preservation of the environment and protecting it from harmful matter such as industrial waste. It's hard to imagine what our lives would look like without these items.
Hello once again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar with me, Sarah Dema. This time, we are going to venture through Iran's knowledge-based productions. We will uncover who makes these products and why they are important to all industries in the country. We will also check out how the government is supporting knowledge-based companies in developing new advanced technologies. So get comfortable and let's start the show.
This time, our journey took us to the city of Abhar in Zanjan province, where we visited Fanovaran Zistkore. This knowledge-based company was established nearly a decade ago and is active in three fields of laboratory work, research, and production of advanced machinery. The beating heart of this company is its advanced lab, which is trusted and certified by the National Environmental Protection Agency. Plus, it's part of the country's strategic technology lab network. Its labs are equipped with environmental monitoring technology as well as other instruments to carry out specialized research. Currently, its extensive lab cooperates closely with various industries, including hospitals in the field of environmental pollution monitoring, and acts as a research center for future innovations. This knowledge-based company provides many research services through its laboratories. For example, it previously carried out research projects